MacCast, Friday, May 20th, 2011. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome to the MacCast. I got a great show for you today because I invited a couple of friends back on the podcast. They've been on before. It's been a while since we've talked to Victor Cahiao and Ken Ray. Victor from the Typical Mac User Podcast, and Ken, of course, from Mac OS Ken. We do every couple months or so get together and do what we call a Three Amigos podcast. We've become friends over the years through podcasting, through Mac Worlds, and being Mac Geeks, and I love getting those guys on the show. Very smart about Apple and what's going on in the community, in the industry with Apple and stuff like that. So we're going to get into some of our insights on Apple's 10th anniversary of their retail stores. Yeah, it's been 10 years since we've had Apple stores. Started out small, and it's grown to, I think, over 300 retail locations now. So pretty big deal happening this weekend. At least there's rumors of that. Apple hasn't made a big deal about it, but it's sounding like if you pop into a retail store this weekend, there might be some changes for you to look at. So we talk about all that, talk about Apple's success in that area. Also take a look at the iPad and the post-PC era, and why Apple is sort of dominating in that and seems to continue to dominate, and why the competition still seems to have their heads spinning a little bit. Also, a little bit about the iTunes Cloud and Music Locker service, along with some great Apple and Mac picks. So hang in, stay tuned for that. And before we jump into the show, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a couple of show sponsors. Stitcher Radio. If you don't have this application on your iOS device, you probably want to grab it, especially if you're a podcast listener or you enjoy radio. It's a really great app. It's free. You can download it. And once you have it on your device, it'll allow you to stream radio and podcasts. So you don't have to deal with downloading. You don't have to deal with syncing. You can get all your favorite programs. They have a nice search functionality so you can find what you're looking for. Very simple, one click to favorite all of your shows. You can star them, they'll show up in a list. So when new episodes are available, you can just play them over Wi-Fi, over 3G. It's really quick and easy. They have all the episodes of the MacCast, the other programs I'm on, like We Have Communicators and Mac Roundtable, or any of your other favorite podcasts. And also local radio. So it can use the geolocation to find the area you're in. You can get your local radio or radio from all over the country, all over the globe, really. And it's completely free, really easy to download. And right now, for a limited time, they're offering a chance to new Stitcher listeners to win an iPad 2. So if you go to stitcher.com/MacCast, they'll have all the details there, but really what you just need to do is download the application. You can get it for the iPhone, you can get it for your Android, and then once you've installed it, enter the code MacCast, M-A-C-C-A-S-T, and you will be entered to win an iPad 2. So do it right now, stitcher.com, stitcher.com/MacCast, and a big thank you to Stitcher for their support of the show. Also, Smile Software, they make a bunch of great software, Disk Label, Text Expander, I've told you about before. Today, I want to talk about PDF Pen and PDF Pen Pro. I rely on PDF Pen for a lot of the stuff that I do with my business, for running the MacCast, also in my personal life, for doing all sorts of things, because it allows me to do a lot of things paperlessly. So I don't have to deal with paper for filling out forms. I can have people send me a simple PDF, even if it's not activated for forms. PDF Pen will allow you to get in and drop in text to edit the existing text. So it's great for filling out forms. I can insert signatures. So I have scans of my signatures and I can bring those in. They even have a library, so I can just add elements to a library. So they're right there, ready to reuse. So if you're finding you're putting in the same images or the same elements over and over again, it allows you to do that. It's great for proofreading. They've got a bunch of proofreader marks built in that you can drop into TDF documents. So if you're collaborating with somebody on something, also they just recently added a really cool text removal and redaction feature. So if you're dealing with legal documents, if you have to share documents, but there's portions that you need to edit out, you can go in, you can use the tools. And what's really important is it removes the underlying metadata OCR information. So a lot of PDFs these days actually have the text embedded in the file as metadata. And there have been some tools in the past that haven't removed that underlying data. So you think you've covered it up by drawing a black box over it, but really the data is still there underlying, and PDFpen deals with that issue. Another great feature that's in PDFpen Pro is an HTML to PDF feature. So you can plug in a URL and it will download the web page, even sub web page. You can tell it how many levels deep you want it to go and generate a PDF from that. And then once it's in PDFpen, you can do all sorts of things with it, like edit the text and add additional information, draw boxes, do commenting. So another great tool, if you're working with someone collaboratively, maybe on building a website and you need to give some feedback, you can put elements on there, draw little arrows, boxes, and notes and things like that, and send them back a PDF. So great for that sort of stuff. Really awesome tool. You can check it out. You can get more details as well as a trial, so you can try before you buy, over at smilesoftware.com. So head there now and take a look at that. And a big thank you to those two sponsors for their support of the show. Okay, now that we got the business stuff out of the way, just sit back, relax, and enjoy a conversation with a couple good friends, Victor Cahiao and Ken Ray. Hey, well, here we are back again. It's been a while since we've done this, but I want to welcome back to the MacCast Victor Cahiao from the Typical Mac User Podcast. Hey, Victor.
Adam, good to talk to you.
And Ken Ray from Mac OS Ken.
Hola, amigo.
Hey, so yeah, we call these our three amigos sessions. And did we even get together to do one at Macworld? See, I'm so bad with my memory.
Unfortunately, Victor came down with Macworld-itis.
Oh, that's
right.
So we were not able to do our record there.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. So we're here now, though, and we've got lots of interesting things to talk about. The first thing I wanted to throw out to you guys is maybe something happened at your Apple retail stores this weekend. A lot of rumors this week that Apple's gearing up for a reboot. They're calling it, what, Apple Store 2.0?
Yeah. Well, that's what, I mean, who knows if that's what Apple's calling it.
But No.
That's what they're calling it. Yeah.
The collective there, the cloud of...
they do like to talk, don't
rumor
they?
Rumor sites. Yeah, I guess that's us, right?
That is if we make it to Sunday.
Oh, that's right. That's
right. What does that mean?
The world is ending tomorrow thing? Come on, bud. Dude, so 1976.
This is the rapture thing?
The rapture, yes. It's probably just a new P. Diddy album coming out, but oh, sorry.
No, Blondie's getting back together, didn't you hear?
There you go.
So yeah, maybe the retail store launch should be being called the Apture.
Oh, look at you. Right off the cuff, right there. Adam Christensen, everybody. Be sure and tip your way through.
Where's my Logic Pro symbol when I need it?
So on the retail store, let's get back to the retail store thing.
Yeah.
That's what I want to talk about. I don't know anything about this Rapture stuff. Something I hadn't realized, and so May 19th, so we're actually, as we record this, it's the 20th, so we're one day past the true 10th anniversary of Apple's retail store openings. Interesting fact is that the first store opened in McLean, Virginia, and then later the same day, Glendale Galleria in California, or the Glendale store in California. I think it's in the Galleria, right? Victor, you're in that area.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So it opened technically after, but apparently has the designation of being store 001.
What's the McLean store? Is it trip 0 or 002?
That's an interesting point,
probably
too.
000.
Is it?
It probably is.
I would imagine it's actually 002.
I mean, Wozniak.
Yeah, that's go for that, Victor, because that's where I was
Wozniak
going.
Wozniak was employed 000.
Really?
Sorry. No, he's 001, isn't he? And Jobs said, then fine, I'll take 000.
Okay, we'll let the audience, but I thought it was just the opposite, that Wozniak wanted one, Jobs said no, so Wozniak said that I'm zero.
Oh, is that how it went down?
I think so.
I might have it backwards. Yeah,
we digress again.
I'm gonna have to. I'll have to look that up as we're chatting about this stuff. We can find the Apple history. But yeah, so I found that an interesting thing, and maybe just because Apple's in California, I don't know. Right. They decided the California store should be 000, but who knows? One of those interesting factoids. But supposedly, you know, sort of an all hands memo went out, and there was going to be this big. No one knew what it was at first. They were going to do some sort of thing at the retail stores, and then of course the rumors started flying, and then everybody realized, oh, we're coming up on the anniversary, and so it sounds like they're going to be doing some internal redesigning, and it's going to happen overnight, and reportedly maybe we'll be able to see the changes on Sunday, or is it Monday? Sometime in that time frame. I guess this weekend is when many people are thinking we'll see the switch over.
Well, there was some report out of Australia that said this was all happening overnight Saturday night, which sort of jibed with some of the reports, I want to say from 9to5 Mac, that we had heard in the States as well. Mm-hmm. So apparently, like, signage, and then there's a possibility from the rumors, which I don't, you know, how much attention do you pay? I know I'm going to go to the Apple store on Sunday. I don't know if we're actually going to see anything. And I don't think it's going to be the big celebration that everybody had thought, you know, a few days ago. But then, I don't know if you remember, people were making a big deal about Apple's 30th anniversary in 2006, right? And like a book was put together and they were going to present it at whatever celebration Apple did, because come on, Apple was going to do a celebration. And then there was no celebration. So I'm wondering if this is just like a decent time for them to retool what they're doing 10 years in, or is it going to be something that they're going to make a big deal about with the consumer?
I think they're not, because they would have sent some sort of announcement or event out to, you know, Mobile Me subscribers. I didn't get anything in my email. So Apple historically does not sort of mark these anniversaries beyond, you know, when they did the 20th anniversary edition Mac, right?
Right, right. Yeah, I agree. I think Apple's just, I mean, they're getting the publicity for nothing, and they're retooling because it's time to do that and incorporate their technology, and why not? And so be it. If you want to tie that into the 10th anniversary, fine. Go ahead.
No t-shirts, no cake, no nothing.
The cake is a lie, as always.
I know, always. It's disappointing.
Yeah, well, I guess so signage, I mean, they're gonna change over some stuff, I think, right?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
We're going to notice differences. They're just not going to tell anybody about it. You're just going to walk in and kind of there's going to be some different sections and areas and stuff like that. They're saying there's going to be new bar type areas for doing different things. The one thing I heard is they're going to create a special area for just doing setups. They're calling startup session area, which they've been doing that for a while now. So that's not anything different, but it sounds like now they're going to have a designated little corner of the store that you can go over to.
See, that doesn't make any sense to me, though. There's at the store here in the Walden Galleria, just outside of Buffalo, there's a table that's not for anything now except for setup.
So it's already there, but doesn't have signage over it yet, I guess.
It's got signage on it, though.
Does it say?
Like, you know, little, I can't remember what it's called, but I mean, it is for, I just bought a computer. I need to get the stuff off my old computer onto this computer. I mean, it's that. So basically, I'm agreeing with you. It doesn't sound like a change. I don't know. Yeah, new signs might be interesting, but
they're saying iPads for informational kiosks. I think it'd be kind of cool if the iPads were sitting out there and somehow networked, and Apple had a special internal application to just update like the information, so they don't have to do printed signage anymore.
Yeah, that's kind of neat. Plus, it forces people who don't even want to look at an iPad to look at an iPad.
Yeah, that totally makes sense that they would do something like that, you know.
Sorry, I was going to say, and then the rumors of them moving the payment system that they use, they've been using iPhones for that, but supposedly it's going to be now on iPads, and the staff is going to be armed with iPads with this special application on it. I guess for a while they've been having... They have a system that comes through the Mac, an internal system with news and information on the retail stuff. But supposedly they're going to have these special iPads with a whole plethora of internal applications, including something they're calling the Daily Download, which is like an internal newspaper. Victor, you're laughing probably for the same reason that I chuckled,
yes,
because there used to be a podcast by the same name. And we won't go into what exactly that was.
No, we won't.
Needless to say, let's say it involved a commode and podcasting.
It involved bits. That's all I gotta say.
But there's I guess there's some applications. So like some for employees to keep up on what's happening with the retail stuff. And the one strange thing was that according to a report, I think again from 9 to 5, that it has the Easy Pay iPad application on there, which is the payment system, I think from Visa or somebody like that, right? It's the Easy Pay Visa. I can't remember which one now.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's my Visa. Notes. Yeah, it's Visa.
But there had been also some rumors that maybe Apple was switching over to Square. So I don't know. They're going to be able to take credit cards from an iPad, which again, I don't think is anything that is that shocking or surprising.
No, it's not. I mean, the weird, it gets weirdest when people walk in with cash. I mean, otherwise you just kind of expect a seamless experience.
I tell you what I think would be really neat if they did do more of, and this is the, you know, the App Store application that we have on our iDevices, if, you know, if you've downloaded it, it would be really great if they make that more, even more location aware, so that that application knows that I'm in one of the stores, and because, you know, we sign into everything using our Apple IDs, then it's able to, you know, gather some information about me as I'm in the store and possibly in my application, you know, present some deals or some, you know, things that I might be interested in within the app, even, you know, related to the store that I frequent most. So I think that that application has some neat possibilities to be integrated into this new, more connected ecosystem if it happens. And I think that would be a really neat advantage for them.
Wasn't there...
The only problem with that is it may end up, you know, thinking that you're at an Apple store up to 100 miles away. Not having the exact location of the Apple store that you're in, but that's okay because you don't necessarily want people to know. That was a rumor that I had seen someplace that it might pop up actually and say, do you want to talk to an expert or something along those lines? If it had my whole dossier, I guess that would be helpful, but I don't want it to just present that to me when I walk in. But if it says, you know, hey, Ken Ray, do you want to talk to somebody about this? Yeah, that might be kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, little things, if you have an open ticket or something, there's possibilities within that application and integrating that into an in-store experience that why wouldn't Apple take advantage of it? Again, obviously, you need to opt in to whatever you'd want to do there.
Wasn't that supposed to already kind of be there? I've never really tried this, but I thought it had the app, if you had it on your phone and you had set up a Genius Bar appointment or something like that. And
oh, yeah,
you
walked into the store in the, yeah.
So if I walk into the store after making my appointment and I pull up the app on my phone, it allows me to check in, right? It recognizes that I'm now at the store and says you can check in for your appointment.
Yes, I've never used that. I believe that feature is already there. Yes.
Have you used that feature?
I have not, personally.
Huh. I need to try that one of these times. I have to go in for a Genius Bar appointment sometime soon. But, you know, regardless on all this stuff, I mean, very significant that Apple started this retail store thing 10 years ago, and there were a lot of people saying that it wasn't going to work. I think they were looking at what people had done in the past, like the Sony stores and the Microsoft stores and the Gateway stores, and everybody kind of thought Apple was crazy.
Yeah.
And obviously not crazy now.
No, crazy like a fox.
So, I mean, do we want to speculate or even say why we think Apple was successful where so many others had failed?
Well, I mean, I honestly, the only Microsoft store that I know about before the Apple store started was the one at the Metreon back around 98, right. 99.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about.
I barely remember that. The Metreon was a really weird thing. If you ever got there. I mean, if you go now, it's like sad because so many businesses are just gone. I want to say two little stalls in the food court are empty, and it's really just kind of a depressing place to go. But the Microsoft store or the Microsoft Experience store or whatever it was called was so subtle that you actually weren't really aware that you were in the Microsoft part of the retail experience or the retail experiment. So, I mean, that didn't work just because, you know, for a store to work, you kind of have to give people a hint that they're in a store. For everything else, I mean, so many electronic sellers were either, you know, motivated by, you know, commission or just, you know, do you want to see this? Do you want to see that? I mean, the cool thing to me, the cool thing about the Apple Store, in addition to the fact that it's just a very inviting kind of feel. I mean, the blonde wood of the tables, the hardwood floor, it's got a very inviting feel. But the other thing is, it's a room full of toys. Mm-hmm. It's a room full of toys that you get to go play with. And nobody is like, hey, looking at the iPad, huh? I mean, what they do is they come up and say, do you have any questions? Okay, well, if you do, let me know. We'll be around. You know, they may say their name, they may not, but nobody's trying to get you. What's it going to take to get you walking out with this iMac? That's not happening. It's sort of like, you know, go there and play. And then if you want something, we're here. And if you don't want something, come back and play some other time. Maybe you will then. I mean, so it's just, it's the mise en scène. I would say it's the whole thing. It's the look, it's the feel. But the biggest thing is, they let the product speak for themselves.
Yeah, they created a place where you could hang out and try the technology. And I think one of the dilemmas that Apple had with a lot of people is they knew about Apple products, they knew what they were, but they really didn't know what they were.
Right.
They hadn't touched them and they hadn't experienced them. And so many of us would always say to people, hey, just, you know, sit down and use a Mac for a period of time. But nobody had really had access. And it was very hard to get that. And now Apple, through creating these retail stores, put them in, you know, every major mall in America and then rolled it out globally. And so people just casually walking by, like you said, it's an inviting space. You walk in, you could walk up to something. And there's a video circulating now or recirculating now that Apple did where Steve Jobs is showing off the retail store. You can find it on YouTube and stuff like that. And I'll try and throw a link to it in the show notes at MacCast.com. But if you watch that video, one of the significant things that he mentions in there is we have all these things set up and they're all connected to the internet.
Yes.
And so you can come in, you can use them. And I think the power of that, it seems like such a small thing, but looking back on it now, you see all these people and all these stories about people who have used the Apple Store as a place to work or create things and then share those online. So there was almost a viral element to it. And so people would go into see an Apple Store, they would try a product and go, oh, you should check it out. And I think just that process of creating an inviting space and allowing people to explore has been something that has made it successful.
The connected to the internet part is not a small thing at all. When I was at the Apple Store, I want to say in November or December, I wandered across to the Radio Shack that's like sort of catty corner in the same mall because I had heard that they had the Samsung Galaxy Tab. And, you know, I had spent a little bit of time joking about it and I thought, well, I really should hold it and, you know, see what it's like. And one of the things I wanted to check was web surfing, and the good people at Radio Shack did not have it connected to the web. Yep. How am I supposed to spend $700 on this thing if I can't try out the one thing, you know, that I'm probably going to be using it for most?
Well, at least it was really a functional device and not just a blank.
That's true. Oh, hey. No, yes, it was.
And the neat thing about that is that when we're trying these products out at that store, you can go to that favorite website of yours, or you can be the kid that records the video for YouTube dancing. You know, they're not going to restrict you. It's there for you to have your full experience, whatever that is for you. And the other thing about being connected, geez, I read a story that during the Japan earthquake, that Apple store there in Tokyo was one of the few places that had internet connectivity, you know, afterwards, and people were crowding and making that a central hub for some communication with their families. So, you know, big deal. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I think is that when you watch that video from Steve that you were talking about, is that the place, he makes it seem like really inviting. Like, bring your family and we have a place for the kids, you know, and that just the aesthetic space itself. If you've ever seen or heard the stories about Steve Jobs and his very blank house with very little furniture, you know, it's simplistic but functional. And I think that that's what makes that Apple Store inviting, that wood, the very simple tables, but functional. You can get done what you need to get done. And then now that they removed the cash registers, in essence, get out quickly. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I saw in reading something, I can't remember if it was about an Apple product or if it was about the Apple stores. Oh, it might have been the Nike story, actually. Where the CEO, the new or the relatively new CEO of Nike called Jobs and said, you know, do you have any advice for me? Did you guys hear the story?
I saw a reference to it. So go ahead.
Yeah, go for it.
Jobs, the CEO of Nike, calls Jobs and says, do you have any advice? And Jobs says, yeah, well, just one thing, which I love the way the story is told. Just one thing. You make a lot of great products after which people lust, but you also make a lot of crap. So get rid of the crappy stuff.
Perfect. Right?
And the CEO of Nike just kind of, you know, laughed, and Jobs didn't. And the CEO of Nike was like, wow, he's right. We have to edit. We have to take a lot of stuff out. And in this story, which I think was written by Carmine Gallo in Fortune, he had this great quote, which was, masterful design is, or design is not done when you've added as much as you can, but when you've taken away as much as you can.
Perfect.
So, I mean, that's large. That could well be part of it, too. I mean, there's a lot of tchotchkes you can buy at the Apple store if you want to. Fewer than there used to be. But, you know, you've got those two walls near the back, at least at the store that I go to, where they've got cases for the iPad and cases for computers and, you know, cases for the iPhone. They've got a little bit of software and some other peripherals. But mostly, I mean, mostly it's a very streamlined. That's like the way back of the bus. That's like if you open up the back of a Greyhound bus, suddenly there's the motor. You know, yeah, that's like that. The front of the bus is where people sit and relax. And by the front, I mean all 20-something rows, all the way to just the very back. And at the very back is the engine and the noise and the heat. And, you know, you can stay away from that and just enjoy the ride if you want to.
And I think if this 2.0 store thing is real, that it really ties in and goes really well in hand with, you know, Apple's stance on not going to trade shows. We don't need to. We have a trade show every day at our store, every minute that there's a customer inside. That function is being performed. And I think anything that they do technologically to enhance that experience is going to go right along the lines of, this is the place where we can highlight all the stuff that Apple stuff can do, the entire ecosystem, not just one product, but the entire ecosystem. And isn't that perfectly aligned with what they're doing with their products?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the products, and the next thing that I kind of want to talk about, this is great because it rolls into that, is the post PC era that Apple is saying that they're creating, or that we're coming up to, and Apple's competitors seeming to not be able to catch up. And the reason this comes about is there was a report I was reading, was a rumor that somebody had talked to one of the major box retailers about the playbook, the BlackBerry playbook, and they said their sales projections for that are 90% under what they were projecting, and that the device is having an extremely high return rate, something like 7%. And they said they also have a high return rate on the Zoom tablet, although that seems to be selling a little bit better. And I've just been fascinated or curious about what Apple has done with the iPad, because I have to say, when I go out with my iPad, I run into people and I'm constantly getting the question, do you like your iPad? I'm really thinking about getting one of those. And it's from people who normally I would have said would have never talked to me about technology. A lot more women, which is interesting. Usually when I have my iPhone or I've had my Mac laptop in a coffee shop or something like that, I don't get approached just by women coming and asking me about it. But that seems to happen with the iPad. And the other thing I've noticed with the iPad, with people I know who own them, is they tend to be buying more iPads. Like they're going to get a second or a third, or like they're going to add one for their kids. It's sort of like what happened with iPods. And so you're hearing these numbers about, you know, people not liking the competitive tablets and wanting to buy more iPads. And that just gets me thinking about what is different about this device. And when I start thinking about that, part of that is that sort of simplification, because the competitors seem to be competing on all these extra features, and it can do more, and we can do multi-windows, and Apple took all that flack about not having background processing, and they still really don't have the true concept of background processing. But when I think about how I use my iPad, it really is. It's a one thing at a time, and there's actually some advantage to that simplification. When I want to really get work done in terms of catching up on my RSS feeds, I'm finding more and more I grab my iPad and I go to the coffee shop, because that gets me away from my email and my Twitter and all these other things when I'm working on my desktop that can take my attention away. And I think we're seeing some of that in what Apple's doing with Lion, too, in terms of the full screen, one window interface, is trying to get us back into that one task simplified mode. Do you guys have a thoughts on why? Why is the iPad able to continue to keep market share now that we start to see some competitors coming on the market?
Well, I don't. There was some analyst who said that HP's WebOS tablet, whatever it's called, the TouchBook, I think it is, has a real chance to give the iPad a run for its money. I kind of think it's too early to say that. What with the TouchBook or whatever it's called not being out yet. But they are the ones that I'm most interested in, and they're the ones that I'm kind of waiting for. And people who listen to other shows that I do, I apologize because I'm going to repeat myself. They get the whole ecosystem idea, and maybe that's because of Rubenstein, or maybe that's because of something else. I don't know what, but they really seem to get the whole thing. Jobs talked about this before. Other people have talked about it before. Competitors, generally speaking, are still looking at tablets as a stack of specs, the same way they have looked at computers as a stack of specs. They sell computers as a commodity, basically, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of trying to sell an experience. And that's been, you know, that's been true. I joked about it somewhere. I can't remember where, but you see an ad for the iPad or the iPhone, and they just show you that, you know, what you can do with that. And then you see an ad for like the Motorola Zoom or, you know, a Droid phone, and they show you robots, and they show you the whole thing being powered by lightning, and they show you the whole thing turning into a spaceship that doesn't take you anyplace, and they don't show you what it actually does. Except, I guess, one now, maybe it's the Playbook, has, you know, shows that it does Flash with that song, yes, which has been right. stuck in my head for the past week. I wound myself around a little bit. I apologize. It seems to me one of the biggest things is the fact that it slots into your ecosystem. You don't look at an iPad and say, well, how do I use this? Or how do I work this into everything else that I'm doing? You know what I mean? I mean, because we've got iPhones, we've got iPod touches, we've got Macs. And even if people don't own any of those things, they've seen them. I mean, they've become accustomed to them. And it becomes part of the whole iOS ecosystem. It's not just like, okay, well, now here's this fast piece of plastic. Go play with that. And then when you're done playing with that, go back to your computer and do what you need to do. I mean, it fits into everything else that you're already doing.
Ken, I think you're so dead on, and I think that is the success story. Forever that I've been like telling my family about, they come to me and I want to buy a computer and blah, 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 and I've always forever and ever said to them, what are you going to use it for? Think about your application first. What is it that you want to do? And then buy the piece of equipment that fits that application. I think that this is, in essence, what Apple has now succeeded in doing, and I have my own little microcosm of my own family, you know, father-in-law who's 88, my sister-in-law who've never touched an Apple product, and all of a sudden I see them buying iPads, buying iPhones, and it's because they first knew or they had seen an application that fulfilled the need for them immediately. That's what hooked them in. And then after they got hooked into that, then they very easily ramp up into, oh, I want to be able to use the video application, or they find other things. So it's this fulfill my need first personally, like you're saying, Ken, and then the device will kind of grow organically around the user, whoever that may be, and it's different for everybody.
You bring up an interesting point there too, Victor, though, because I used to do the same thing when people were asking me about computer recommendations, desktop recommendations, was, well, what are you going to use it for? Another interesting thing I think I've noticed about the iPad is that a lot of times when I would ask people that question, they really didn't have a firm answer, or they kind of could figure it out, but they hadn't really thought about it. Mm-hmm. What I'm finding interesting about the iPad is people pick it up, and it's probably because of Apple's application ecosystem, they usually immediately find. It's like the iPad helps them discover the application that they want to use it for. I don't know if I'm translating that properly.
No, I agree.
And I don't know why that is. You know, I guess I just am amazed that it seems to be a new platform that people immediately find a use for, and everybody's use for it is highly individualized.
And the one application, at least again in my little microcosm of a family thing, that has been the key has been FaceTime. It is the application that allures people to have that conversation with that distant grandson or cousin or whatever. And even though a lot of us, including me, sometimes have poo-pooed that app, this is what's hooking them. And this is the reason my sister-in-law got an iPod Touch first and now an iPad. And it seems to be a really unifying application because that's such a personal experience. It's so neat that I can pick up one of my devices today and speak to my father-in-law who's sick. And that's very compelling. That's very compelling at the heartstring level.
Yeah. You chuckle a little bit, Ken.
Oh, I've only done a FaceTime call with myself.
How do you do that?
with my Mac.
Oh, yeah.
Sitting here with my Mac, just trying it just to see how it looked and to see how it worked and how easily and all that stuff. I mentioned on my live show one time that I had yet to do an actual FaceTime call. And so Allison Sheridan, who was listening to my live show, tried to, you know, call me FaceTime. But hi, I was doing a show.
Right.
Right. So it's not going to stop.
My Allison. Phone was like, my phone was somewhere else. And she was like, I'm doing a FaceTime call with you right now. And it's like, well, I'm doing a show right now. I can't, you know. So yep. I appreciated her doing it. But I still haven't done a FaceTime call. So maybe when she's listening to this show, I'm going to get a FaceTime call out of nowhere from Allison.
Well, Adam, I mean, you know about this. That's been a huge thing for you. Like when your Macworld experience now is so much richer because of FaceTime.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice to be able to call back and see somebody. Now, my wife doesn't like doing FaceTime calls, so I don't get to do that very much with her. But it is nice when you have the option. But I think this really clearly illustrates the point that I'm trying to make is that these devices are adapting their uses to the user. And I think people are responding to that sort of lack of, I don't know why we felt we had restrictions on the desktop, because I don't think they were there, but somehow, and maybe it's what Steve Jobs was mentioning about it's the experience. And maybe this all just keeps coming back to the experience that you have with it. It's a much more personal and non-technological experience. And Apple has simplified the thing down and taken away a lot of, I think, people's perceptions of technology being difficult or hard. And for some reason, the form factor of an iPad or an iPhone is much more friendly. And I think that's why this post-PC era is coming about. And I think Apple's getting it. And I still don't understand why the competitors, and maybe it's because they've never thought about it this way, and Apple always has. And this is what I keep coming back to, is thinking that Apple has always been about the experience driving the technology and not the technology driving the experience. And so now that we're in this world where people have kind of become fed up with having to wrestle with technology, and Apple has created a space like the retail store that someone can walk into and truly experience the difference for themselves, I think that's why Apple is gaining a lot of traction right now. And we hear a lot of them, you know, a lot of this stuff in the press.
There was a, last week we had to go to the Apple store. And what's funny is the quickest way to get to the Apple store is to walk through Best Buy at the mall where we go. And we're going through because my girlfriend needed to have her iPhone looked at by a genius. And walking through the Best Buy, some phone catches her eye. And I thought, she can't actually be interested in that. She has an iPhone.
Right.
She looked at me and she said, it's like everybody just waits for Apple to make something and then just copies it.
Yep.
So, I mean, I guess that's the other part of it as well. And this, again, is why I'm curious about, I have not spent enough time with WebOS. I have not spent enough time with Palm's WebOS. I know some people who have, who absolutely loved it. And they didn't love it like people love Android. It's like, well, I'm not going to get an Apple phone because I don't like the closed system, so I'm going to get Android, and it's awesome. They loved WebOS like they love WebOS for no other reason than they love WebOS. So I'm really curious to see how that goes. And I would say, although you certainly couldn't say that they aren't borrowing a thing or two from what, you know, what was done in Cupertino. Mm-hmm. I am curious to see what they, so bring it right back to the very first thing I said. I'm really curious to see what they come up with.
Yeah,
I think it's going to unseat the iPad? Really highly doubtful.
Unfortunately, I think that the problem for Palm and HP has been a problem of marketing more than anything else. I don't know that, like you're saying, I agree. I've heard people say that the technology is really great. Supposedly, the notification system is awesome and far better than anything that Apple has. And some of the app switching stuff is pretty good too, or the running multiple applications and how they handle that. And I've heard that over and over again. But the thing is I don't know anybody who has those devices, like you're saying. Just don't see them. It just they right. seem to have a traction problem, not necessarily maybe an experience or technology problem.
The one thing I think, or one thing, I shouldn't say the one thing, but one thing that HP is definitely going to have going for it is the fact that it's already got so many inroads in business. What it's going to have going against it is the fact, I loved the stories from earlier this week. I can't remember who it was now that ran the survey, but they had surveyed something like 448 businesses that either had deployed iPads or were going to deploy iPads this year, and then a significant portion we're going to deploy iPads next year. And so then they get down to the nitty-gritty and say, okay, so what are you guys going to do with it? Half of the respondents were like, oh yeah, huh. They don't have a clear idea of what they're going to do with the iPad, but they know they got to have it. Yep. That's, and it's not they have to have a tablet. It's they have to have an iPad. And my other favorite part of that was the IT people that they surveyed. Like 40-something percent of the IT people said, yeah, these guys don't get the fact that we're actually going to have to build something for the iPad to make it work specifically with our business, which I thought was fantastic too. It was something like 40-something percent, which led the firm that ran the survey to think that there's a disconnect between business and IT. And I'll tell you, you could have knocked me over with a feather when I read that.
Yeah, that's absolutely nothing new.
The other thing, Adam, that I've seen, and I don't know if you guys have experienced with your friends or whatever, is that it seems like when people get a hold of one of these devices, iPad, iPhone, whatever it is, it's almost like all of a sudden they're like included. Oh, we're a part of this thing now. And all of a sudden, I mean, I have, again, I'm going to use my relatives because that's my point of reference. You know, oh, he comes here to California. Oh, we got to go to the Apple store. You know, they don't have one in North Dakota. So it's like, we got to go. It's part of the trip that we have to go to the Apple store. And so that or just like even us, I don't know about your family, but, you know, Mary and I will wake up on a Sunday and go, let's go to the Apple store. It's not like I don't know what's there. You know, but we still make that trek. And I think it's because of this inclusiveness that we feel that is attached to the trademark, to being, you know, to being, it's not the cool kid thing. It's more like this device is a part of what I do or whatever I am. For me, it's more the iPhone than I think it is the iPad, but you get the idea.
Can I ask a question? Is your Apple store like a standalone, like you walk in from the outside or do you walk in through a mall?
Both the ones that are close to my house are standalone type out, you know, outside mall type things. Yeah.
All right. Cause I only go to the Apple store now when I have to, unless I have to be at the mall for something else. I hate going to the mall. And I used to be what you're talking about. I mean, like, you know, in San Francisco, I still am. Whenever I'm back in the Bay Area, I'll stop by the Stockton Street store with absolutely no need for anything, but I'll just go. But, you know, I don't have to walk past a Pretzel Time.
Right. You know, that's my point.
Location.
Yeah. And, you know, the location here makes sense because there's not a cool, chic shopping destination that isn't a mall here. And, you know, part of that could be because it goes down to 12 degrees.
Yeah, I was going to say the weather probably has something to do with that.
Yeah, but it still makes it a less appealing, less attractive thing for me, if anybody's listening.
I want to hit on this topic really quick because it relates to the iPad in this post-PC era and usage and stuff like that. And also, I think, ties into something, Victor, that you've talked about for a long time. Nielsen came out with some numbers on how people are using tablets as it relates to television. And they said that 70% of tablet owners are watching TV with their tablets to kind of look up stuff. But then also that 30% of people are using it to actually watch. They said TV. I'm assuming they mean like, you know, video TV programs. You know,
Netflix.
I guess we can't technically call it a TV yet. But the idea of this convergence, and I'm finding, you know, I'm using Netflix a lot on both my iPhone and my iPad. It's my preferred way to kind of watch Netflix now. And I think some numbers came out too that said Netflix is accounting for something like 30% of the traffic, internet traffic. In the evenings now,
some huge number.
So I think more and more people are getting their entertainment on these devices, or supplementing their entertainment with additional content on these devices.
Yeah, I mean, I know in our family that's the case. Even if it's not the iPad, it tends to be more of the laptops when we're watching TV. But it's like, oh, I want to know something. I have my device. I can go look it up right now as I'm watching this show. It becomes like interactive TV. You know, everybody thought it was going to always be tied in directly to the physical set.
Right.
It's turning out to be that it's not. Interactive TV can be enhanced by these types of devices that we're holding on our laps or sitting on our laps or whatever. And they do become interactive because I can go find out about, oh, who is that movie star? Boom. I'm in there. I'm in Wikipedia. I'm in MDB. It's a quite a cool experience, although the downside to all of it is that I think we're becoming just so ADD that we lack focus as a society. You know, that's all.
Nah, that's not happening.
Remember pop-up videos?
Yeah, oh, yeah, like, totally.
Yeah, that's pretty much what the iPad has made me now as far as watching television.
Okay, good. You're right with me then.
Yeah. IMDb, like, I mean, I seriously, before I watch a movie or before I watch, especially because we're watching like a lot of series that, you know, are older series. And it's like, hey, who's that guy? Oh, he's the guy who played the guy from Intelligence. And now he's in this show. You know, it's like, it's ridiculous. And, you know, to the point that you end up missing part of the show because you're so curious. Where have I seen that guy? Well, I could watch him right now and find out later. But no. I'm gonna miss 5 minutes of the show to find out what show he used to be in.
I had the same thing happen last night because I watched Big Bang Theory and we were watching it and Sheldon had this shirt on that had a number 37 on it or 73, and I'm right. Like, why does he have that on? And I had to, you know, quick. I had my iPad there or my iPhone or whatever and looked it up, and it goes back to a reference from a prior show where he asked everybody, you know, what's the best number. And then he went into one of his diatribes about why 73 was the best number, mm-hmm. and, you know, having to do with it containing prime numbers and 7 and 3 multiplying up to 21, which is also a prime number, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm probably getting all that wrong because I'm not a math person. But it was like I could get that information right away. And it's so kind of neat to have that happen. But also, like you're saying, a little ADD. It's like, why did I have to know right then and there why, you know, what the significance of that shirt was? But I did it.
Yeah.
But the thing I find fascinating about this, Victor, is there's been these rumors, and I know you've been kind of saying that you think at some point Apple is going to actually make an Apple-branded TV. I'm finding more and more now with, like, AirPlay technology, it's almost like you said, that Apple sort of reversed the process a little bit, where we now have these devices that we're consuming TV, and now we can kind of push content over to the big set, whereas, you know, people like Google and a lot of other people are sort of trying to partner with television manufacturers to build the technology into a set. It seems like Apple's getting us used to this technology from a different direction, and then we'll maybe bring out a product. I don't know what your thoughts on that are.
Yeah, I mean, I think that certainly would be a viable way to go. I think no matter what, God knows about the Apple Real TV thing, but no matter what, when they do it, it's going to be ramped up to us so that it'll seem like, oh, that's the next natural step. And of course that it integrates with my iPad or iPhone or whatever. So I think that that's just going to kind of naturally flow, especially given some of the cloud-based rumors that we might talk about later in the show that are around, that it's just going to make it easy for us to watch our content wherever we're at. Well, yep. If that physical device is a TV too, why not a TV? So yeah, I think it's all leaning towards that area, whether it's a physical device by Apple or not, I don't know anymore. Yeah.
Well, I know we're kind of tight on time. We're probably going to jump out of here. So let's dive into the cloud thing, and we'll make this our last thing, and then we'll do a couple picks and get out of here. But rumors this week that Apple signed both EMI and Sony for this iTunes Music Cloud Locker storage thing. Also some rumors that Apple is also building a data center in Silicon Valley, not nearly as large, something like 11,000 square feet, I guess, expanding some of their data centers in Silicon Valley. And we had heard rumors in the past, too, that Apple would be building data centers in other parts of the world. So it sounds like they're gearing up to do some sort of thing with distribution of content, right?
Well, yeah.
Sure sounds like it to me. and they're doing it the right way.
Are they doing it the right way? I mean, there's this whole debate going on because Google and Amazon launched their cloud services. It's reported that the music labels aren't too happy with them because they sort of bypassed licensing. The music industry seems to feel that if we get a digital stream, even if we've bought the music already, that there's some additional licensing that should be paid. And I find it very interesting that they're suddenly kind of pointing to Apple as saying, well, Apple's, you know, doing licensing deals with us, and we like that. They're going to be able to offer more content or a better experience. I'm kind of curious what more would be when it comes to music. I mean, if I can access the music off of a cloud server and stream it and download it, I'm not sure what more Apple's going to gain by licensing. But
may I?
Yeah.
Victor has been beating the drum for an Apple-branded TV for years.
Uh-huh.
I have been beating the drum for a subscription-based music service from Apple for years and years.
Yep.
What more could there be? I'm not saying they're going to do it because I've been burned so many times. I've thought they were going to do it. I've thought they should do it so many times. They may, in fact, never do it. But, I mean, I still want it. I finally, about 3 weeks ago, after years of not having it, despite saying how much I love subscription music services, I finally, over the past 2 or 3 weeks, signed up again for a Rhapsody account. And the one thing that bothers me about my Rhapsody account is I've spent so long not having it that there are some days that I forget that I have it. Otherwise, I love it. I am absolutely loving it. Now, I do have a little bit of the ADD thing that we talked about earlier with, you know, TV and the iPad. I'll be listening to a song and it'll remind me of another song. And so sometimes the song I'm listening to won't even end and I've already searched and found another song and I've started playing it. All of which is to say, I love music subscription services. And I have always thought that Steve Jobs was a tiny bit disingenuous when he said, I'm sorry, I had to find a nice way to say it, a tiny bit disingenuous, when he said, people don't want to rent music, people want to own music. I'm not sure that that's true. I think what people want is music. And I think what Apple wants is recurring revenue. And I think what the music labels want is definitely recurring revenue.
Yeah.
And so even though they might not make as much money, like if all 100 million credit cards that Apple has were buying one album a month or two albums a month, the music industry would be very happy. But that's not happening. So if instead they could get a significant portion of people to pay $5 a month or $10 a month to have access to everything, I think that they might be a little bit happier. Do I think that that's what's going to happen this time? On that, I have to pass. But, I mean, that's what I want to see because this, I mean, this Music Locker thing leaves me so flat. I just don't care. I've already got the music I've got. And so thanks for giving it to me someplace else. But if you're going to do that, give it to me for free because guess what? I've already got the music I've got. You think I don't want to rent music I don't own? Imagine how happy I'm going to be about renting music I do own.
Yeah, the locker thing has more appeal to me from the standpoint of, one, backup for my music, but I'm more interested to see if the locker is going to support video and movies, because honestly, probably the only barrier now for me buying my movies on iTunes versus DVD, because I have certain movies that I like to watch and rewatch, and I still buy them on DVD. It used to be all the extra features, but now those are part of iTunes. Now the problem is I don't want to have to manage storage of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Because the files, you know, two gigabytes of 100 movies is going to be just a pain to have to deal with backing up and managing and worrying about losing. And if I lose it and I can't re-download it, then I've lost, you know, I'm out my $15 or whatever it is. And so I want the cloud service more for that, but if I can bonus get access to my music that I've purchased, that's great too. I have to say that I am enjoying Pandora a lot more in terms of when I'm bouncing between iTunes and Pandora, and Pandora is kind of how I'm getting my streaming music. Now I don't have finite control over that, obviously. You know, right. I can't pick and choose the music that I want to hear, but it's worked out enough for me that I can do some genres and set up some stations of the types of music that I like, and I kind of get it more radio style, and I am enjoying that. So I could see myself, if the pricing were right and it made sense, warming up to a subscription service, but it's never been anything I've been particularly interested in.
So I'm going to say, Ken, to your point, I think that one of the things that benefits or could be really beneficial in that locker model with the stuff you already have. Mm-hmm. What if the stuff that they were storing for you wasn't just what you purchased via the Apple iTunes store, but that in essence, they can go into your hard drive and say, you have all this stuff in your hard drive, regardless of where you got it. We're going to assume that you bought that legally and we're going to let you store that stuff as well. We're going to discover that, you know, automatically for you. And by the way, once we know that you can own that stuff, you really don't even have to have all that stuff in your own hard drive, to Adam's point. I think this is where the real key to a successful locker model is going to be, is the moment that I don't have to be storing physically these hundreds of songs or movies in my devices, especially as devices get smaller like the iPad and the MacBook Air. That's when the keys to the kingdom open up for me. on the other side of that argument is I've been lucky enough, quote unquote, to have an opportunity to be using Spotify for well over a year. Don't ask me how. And it's a wonderful experience to be able to say, oh my gosh, this song from my past just came into my mind. Or, you know what? I have to listen to Forget You right now because of whatever just happened. And I can put that in and it's all available to me. So hopefully whatever Apple does primarily gives us choice, but also gets things off of our hard drives and backups and physical storage. That to me would be a win, something that I'm going to be willing to pay for.
Okay, let me, if I may though, Apple's a consumer electronics company and you're a geek. I mean, what you're talking about is something that, and I'm a geek, although I'm not as much of a geek. I'm more of a geek now than I used to be. We all know, we've all made fun of me. Up until a year ago, I didn't have a real backup solution. And I know better, right? Uh-huh. Average consumer does not. And so if what Apple's going to come out with is this really cool way that you can back up the stuff that you own, you know, that's really not going to fly, I don't think. Now, if it becomes... Go ahead.
Not even back it up. So much as once we know you have it in this one place, mm-hmm. now it's available to you everywhere without you having to store it in those other places. Your iPad, your iPhone, your second computer, your third computer, all of that. It all becomes available now because we know you legally own it in the one place that we got it from.
Nah, see, I still don't think that works though, because you don't know that you legally own it. Apple might be willing to take that on faith. I don't think the record labels are. Okay, that's
don't?
One thing. No, I really, you know, oddly,
labels trust us.
I'm not sure that they're going to do that. I think something. I mean, if they want to sell that idea, if they want to sell that possibility, that's fine. But let me ask you a question. Why am I going to pay $15 a month to be limited to the content that I already own when I can pay $15 a month to Zune or pay $10 a month to Rhapsody and be limited to nothing? Every song, you know, you just talked about it with the Spotify thing. Every song, $10 a month.
And I think Apple's going to give us both.
All of the songs that you have, $15 a month.
Man. See, my thought is Apple's going to give us both of those worlds. I really think they're going to. I mean, I think that that's the logical choice. I want the locker and I want the choice. And I think Apple knows that.
All right. Oh, okay. Never mind. I'll quit arguing. Since we're agreeing, I'll quit arguing. I'm sorry.
But it is a great discussion to have.
Well, yeah, I think Apple's going to do the locker thing and let other people handle the streaming stuff just like they are now.
All right.
So,
oh God, I hope you're wrong.
me too.
But honestly, I've been hoping this for like the past 4 years or 5 years. Whenever the first time I heard Steve Jobs say, people don't want to rent their music; they want to own their music.
Right.
And I think the argument that I made 3 or 4 years ago is no, people want to own iPods, and now people want to own iPhones, and people want to own iPads, and so people want. You know, they want that experience. And at the time, there was no way to get a subscription service onto your iPad. Now you do have Rhapsody and you do have, I think, a couple of other possibilities as well. But if it doesn't cost Apple anything extra to do it, and if they are able to get extra money out of it, I mean, if they're in there making deals anyway,
right?
Why wouldn't they?
Well, and that might be where I'm wrong, because once again, I think this is about experience. And when Apple was making those statements that, you know, nobody wants to rent their music, it was a much different time in terms of how you would do that and the experience that you would have in renting that, right? In renting that music. Getting access to it was much more difficult. We didn't have the kinds of cell networks and bandwidth that we have now. So if Apple can create a better experience for that and they feel it's going to work, then they might do it.
And I'm sorry, really quickly. Ken. You also weren't talking about hyper-connected devices at that point. I mean, your iPod was a brick. It was a little island that you carried around in your pocket, and you had to sync it to your computer, and Apple was not going to license FairPlay. In fact, Rhapsody found a way, I think, with a product called Harmony, Rhapsody found a way to get their subscription music to work on iPods, and so Apple then updated the firmware on iPods. So, no, it didn't. I mean, we were not talking about the same sort of connectivity. We weren't talking about the same sort of, and also we weren't talking about the same level of control. Apple can afford to rent me music now because if I'm going to buy music, I'm going to buy it from iTunes, as are a majority of people on the planet. They're the biggest music seller now. So they can now afford to tinker with rental
now that they actually, now that they're already the store that you're going to go to if you're going to buy.
And they may let you tinker with it in a way that, you know, the rental model just gives you a lot lower bandwidth version of it, you know, not the same fidelity. And it's going to be good enough for when I'm out there and I'm on the iPhone and I want to hear that quick song. But, you know, I still want to get the higher bit version and stuff. Here's an option to buy that.
Yeah.
So this is where they could control some of those parameters to make the rent experience different than the buying experience, but still give you flexibility as a consumer to make choices that are right for you at the moment in time.
Yeah, as crappy as it sounds, Zune, I know, charges $15 a month, but Wayne, developer Wayne Dixon, I believe is his last name, and he's also a regular caller into macOS Ken Live, for that $15, he gets the unlimited access, whatever, and he gets 10 MP3s a month. So, I mean, he, and like, those are his from then on. Now, why does the Zune have a better deal? I mean, that just makes no sense. Apple's got all the power in music. Originally, you thought that the Zune had a better deal because the record companies were trying to undercut anything that Apple was doing. At this point, I don't know if they have Stockholm syndrome or what, but at this point, the record companies want to make Apple happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're afraid to lose what they've got now with iTunes. And so maybe it's just been a matter of timing. I'm probably talking myself into something that they're still not going to offer.
Well, I think it goes back to what I was mentioning earlier, is now Amazon and Google have done something that, you know, they were giving those guys all kinds of good breaks on the music and it was cheaper and what have you. And now they've gone and done something that the music industry is not happy with. And so now they're going, well, shoot, maybe we had a better deal with Apple. Let's go back to these guys. All right. Well, we could go on and on. There's lots of other great topics I was hoping to cover. We're going to have to do this again more frequently, I think. But I did want to do a couple quick picks for everybody. So I don't know. I kind of sprung this on you guys right as we started the call. So if you don't have something, that's fine. I think Victor, you have something. Ken, do you have something?
I've got two things.
Okay, great. So let's start with you, Victor. What do you got?
Yeah, and I ended up having two things, so I hope that's okay.
That's fine.
The first one is real quick by a company called New Potato Tech, newpotatotech.com. They make some apps and stuff, but they also make a device that I am really, really enjoying called the Tune Link Auto. And this is basically a cigarette lighter type device that goes into your car and then connects to your audio input device in your car and turns your iPad, iPhone, whatever it is, into a Bluetooth wireless stereo system. So the moment that I get into my car now, I'm carrying my iPod with me, I can just start playing my tunes right through my radio, high fidelity. If you don't have an input jack, it'll let you do it through an FM receiver. $99. It just worked out of the box. I first heard about it from George Starcher, and I picked one up. Really nice. The second one, Adam, and this just came to my head because I've been enjoying it so much this week, is if you haven't tried the HBO Go application and you have access to it, it's wonderful. It's wonderfully built. It's a beautiful looking application. And again, it just works. I was able to get into it in a matter of about a minute using my UVerse login, and I'm in, and I can watch all my HBO shows now on my iPad anywhere I am. Very great implementation of this on HBO's part.
And that you have to have HBO service to use, right?
Yes, yes. Now, I'm a subscriber to HBO through my cable operator. When you first log in or when you first get the app, they tell you, pick your operator, and then you log in with your operator's credentials, which is really nice. And then it's like, boom, okay, you have access. What's your ID for HBO Go? And then when you turn on the app, the stuff is all available for you. And it's just a beautiful app to look at.
Is it all their shows or is it a subset?
Geez, from the subset that I'm seeing, it's a lot of the stuff I'd want to watch. I don't know if it's every single show they have, but it's all their original shows. It's The Wire, Talking Funny. There's movies like Bruno. So it's a mixture of things, a lot of variety. And I've tried several of them out. And, you know, Book of Thrones was the one that I spent a lot of the week with, catching up. Sorry, Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And I've just enjoyed it. So if you have an HBO subscription, why not take advantage of this new way to use it? It's very cool.
Very cool. Ken?
I lied. I now have three, but I will keep them. I will keep two of them super, super short. And then one of them, you can edit out if you want
to. I don't think anybody's going to complain about picks.
Well, I got one that people might complain about. But there's an app called Crackle. Crackle is a video streaming app put out by Sony, I believe, Sony Entertainment. Horrible, horrible implementation of ads. I mean, just really like painful implementation of ads. But there was a show on it called Hutch that was a very short-lived, canceled way before it should have been canceled, according to the actual write-up in Crackle. Mm-hmm. Hank Azaria, Oliver Platt. And then you'll end up playing the IMDb game where you're like, oh, wow, I know that guy. Oh, hey, I know who that is. Blythe Danner is also in it. Incredibly witty, incredibly funny. So I'm almost picking a show inside Crackle. Now, be prepared, though. Implementation of advertising in it is terrible. I mean, it's almost painful. But to be able to watch shows that you don't have access to anyplace else like Hutch, it's worth doing that. The second thing, did you know that this year's MacBook Pros are already available as refurbs?
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, because I've got one coming to me.
Ooh, so now, congrats.
Now I'll tell everybody.
Now you know like, they're not going to be sold out, yeah?
Yeah.
It's on.
I saw one, and then I was going to order it the next day and went the next day, and it was gone. And I was crestfallen and thought it might be weeks before it was available again. And it turns out it was available again the next day. So I don't know about all the models. 13-inch is what I was interested in. And they had both the Core i5 and Core i7. I got the Core i5. And it'll be here Monday, and then a whole new world opens up to me. The third one, if you – and again, you may want to edit this out. you mentioned the whole thing about T-shirts and Sheldon's T-shirt, and this is what reminded me of it. There is a Republican legislator in Tennessee, my home state, who is trying to pass a law that would basically, in certain situations, I believe in school situations in particular, it would make it illegal to talk about homosexuality or say the word gay. And I don't know where you are politically on that. The thing is, though, denying that something exists or pretending that something doesn't exist doesn't change anything, except that, you know, it actually stands to do more harm than good. All of that aside, Mr. Sulu, who is a homosexual, has come out with a line of T-shirts. He is now offering his name in place of gay. So George Takei has put out a video on YouTube encouraging people to say that they're proud to be Takei and that they can go to the Takei Pride parades. And he's actually come out with a shirt. It's got the I don't know if he got the rights to it, but it's got the Star Trek logo, except with the homosexual with the rainbow symbol instead of being silver or gold, with the slogan "Proud to be Takei." Now, again, politics aside, I love the sense of humor in that. and if I weren't worried about what people would think, I'd buy one of the shirts because I think it's funny. But I'm not. I'm not Takei. Not that there's anything wrong with being Takei.
So. That's going to be a very cool. That is so Takei. It's going to be such a cool thing to say now. That's great.
Which he actually said. He was like, "You can say that and not worry about offending anybody." That's so Takei. Which he actually did. You know,
he's got that great voice.
You know, like Takei does, because you know it's his voice. And what can he do? So that's those are awesome. My three picks.
All right. Very
there you go.
Very cool. Seems like Star Trek got a lot of buzz this week because they came out with the space shuttle calendar poster, right, too? Did you guys see that?
Oh, that was awesome.
Oh, yeah. Right. With the crew recreating Star Trek posters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. Love it.
Those are over at NASA. We can make that another little side pick. All right. Since you guys did three, I'm going to have to do two. And keeping in this theme of sort of... One of my picks has to do with taking your music with you, because I got this specifically. I have a MacBook Pro and my hard drive was filling up with all my media content, my movies and TV shows and stuff like that. And so I wanted to offload that onto an external drive. And I ended up buying one of OWC's, the Elite AL Pro Mini drives.
Mm-hmm.
And I've absolutely loved it. I ended up getting they have a bunch of different models at different price points, so depending on what you need, I ended up going with the 500 gigabyte 7200 RPM drive, and it was like $130. You order it online, it was here in a couple days. And what is great about it is I always had this dilemma of when I had to take my laptop on the road, if I moved my music and my media to an external, I wouldn't have access to that. And so if I wanted to download podcasts, it was just too inconvenient. So I thought, you know, I just want a drive that I can actually bring with me on the road, plug it in, have it be USB powered or FireWire powered. In this case, this is a quad interface. It has eSATA, USB 2, FireWire 800. So I guess it's triple interface. We'll do FireWire 400 too through a FireWire adapter. And it's just a really nice, solid drive. It's nice and small and compact, so I can throw it in my bag. It's got a great aluminum enclosure. The design looks great, so it matches your MacBook or Pro or your MacBook or your any Mac, you know, since they're all aluminum and glass now. Only thing that would make it better is if at some point I could hook it up to my iPad and get my iTunes that way. But then I wouldn't have to take my MacBook Pro on the road. But for just moving my music around and having it with me when I want to have it with me. It doesn't leave the house all that often, but it's a nice option. And if somebody's just looking for a really nice external drive, I would highly recommend almost anything from OWC. So,
have you heard about the Seagate GoFlex?
Yeah.
You mentioned the iPad thing?
Yeah, yes, I just actually got one of those as a warranty replacement for one of my Seagate drives that broke, I think.
The GoFlex, really?
You got a GoFlex? The one with the Wi-Fi built in?
Oh, no, I just got a free agent Go. Sorry.
Oh.
The GoFlex, and this is like future pick. I'm kind of curious about it. It's a hard drive with Wi-Fi built in and battery powered, and then it's got an application, or it will have an application in the App Store. So basically you can store media on the GoFlex and then stream it to your iPad or your iPhone or your iPod Touch. And I guess other devices as well, but the iOS app is what makes it like, you know, expanded storage for your iThing.
Does it
provided everything doesn't live in the cloud.
Is it doing web? Does it have a little built-in web dev on it? Do you know?
Basically, that's what it's doing. It's got a little Linux server built in that is able to do the Wi-Fi thing. And then, yeah, so it's...
Not out yet, though. It doesn't come out, until July. And it's a couple $100 when it does.
Yeah, I can't wait till OWC makes its version.
Because there's a company, and I'm trying to get one for review. There's a company out now that makes a USB flash drive called the AirStash that does the same thing. It's USB flash drive storage, but then it also has a little built-in Wi-Fi web dev server. So cool. You could move files on and off of it through web dev, any applications on your iPad or your iPhone that support web dev. So...
Sorry to interrupt. I just didn't know if you had heard about the GoFlex.
And then my last pick real quick is Super 8. Have you guys seen Super 8? It's now free from Paramount Studios, actually, because I guess they have a new film out by the same name done by J.J. Abrams or coming out.
Yeah. No.
And it basically lets you shoot video with, you know, overlays, Super 8 style, the little lines and dirt and the clicking
perfect.
Sounds and stuff like that.
Perfect for the crappy iPad camera.
What'd you say?
Are they going to be issuing a 99-cent refund if I've already paid for it?
Is it this? I didn't know if it was the same app that was out that was already the paid app. I didn't know if it was the same or different.
I honestly don't know either. I'll have to go look at it.
Yeah, I hadn't done the research on that.
I've had 8mm or Super 8?
This one's called Super 8.
Okay.
Yeah, which is probably the difference. I had been, and this is the thing, I had been thinking about buying the 8mm app because I heard you talk about it and I had seen it and it looked really cool. I think that one does a little more effects and has a little more options. The Super 8 one, a couple quirky things about it, because it is free and I'm willing to accept this. Apparently, when you shoot your video and then you play it back within the application, it will at one point during the video insert like a random kind of clip. And apparently, if you collect all the clips, you can unlock something extra. I kind of read about it briefly on the website. The good news is when you export the video, it doesn't have that little extra clip in there. So when you export it out to your camera roll, you just have just the video with the Super 8 effects applied to it. So
that's cool.
If you notice that in the app, don't worry. It's not going to be in your finished video. They do put a little leader strip on the front of it, and that does export out. But other than that, it's a cool app, and it's free. So
there you go.
Very cool.
I'm getting it from my iPad because, you know, it's a crappy camera. It'll be perfect for a Super 8
I think it's not universal, though. I noticed I had it on my iPad, and it comes up in the... So I don't know if you care about that or not, but it does.
Oh, yeah. It'll do the miniature mode, though. Good enough.
The mini mode, yeah.
good enough for me.
Anyway, great picks, guys. Great show. Thanks for, I'm glad we finally got together again. Real briefly, let's tell everybody where they can find you, Victor.
TypicalMacUser.com and TypicalShutterbug.com. Come over and visit.
All right. And Ken?
MacOSKen.com is the website. I do a live show on Ustream every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. I would love to have people stop by there. And I often remind people about it on Twitter, twitter.com/MacOSKen.
So there you go, the three amigos. I hope you enjoyed that. I certainly enjoyed it. I love getting Victor and Ken on the show just to gab about Mac stuff and kind of geek out. They're really great guys and really smart about all this stuff. So if you don't subscribe to their shows already, you should check them out. You can find them on iTunes and, of course, through their websites or over there on Twitter. So check them out and follow them and do all that good stuff. You know what? Before I get out of here, I do want to take a moment, thank all of my show sponsors. Gazelle, you know what? Gazelle gives you cash for your old electronics. You got an old digital camera, an iPod, an iPad you want to trade up. Head over to gazelle.com, plug in the device you have, and get an offer for cash. Don't let it end up in the landfill. Great way to get some money for your old gear. Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook. You can check out their software, get more information and details, as well as a free trial over at circusponies.com. Smile, Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label, all great applications, well worth taking a look at. You can get more information as well as trials over at smilesoftware.com. And Stitcher Radio, download the app now, and new listeners who sign up have a chance to win a free iPad 2. Just head to stitcher.com/maccast for the details, and when you register at the app, make sure to put in the code MACCAST. You'll be automatically subscribed to the MacCast in the app and entered into that contest. So big thank you to all of my show sponsors for their support of the MacCast. A big thank you to you for your support. I appreciate you continuing to listen and staying subscribed. If you'd like to support the show even further, you can check out the MacCast member program. I deliver some extra content each and every week exclusively for MacCast members, just for a couple bucks a month. That's all it costs you, and you get some extra great content. So you can check out the details on that program and sign up. A couple different ways to subscribe. I have a month-to-month, a six-month, and a 12-month option. All the details are over at member.maccast.com, and I appreciate you taking a look at that. And that's going to do it for today. Oh, I guess if you have any feedback for me, any comments, any suggestions, a question for the show, you can send those to maccast@gmail.com. I welcome your audio questions. A great way to do that is through the audio recorder on your iPhone. You can record right on the device and email it directly to me from there, and the audio usually comes across really great on the show. So feel free to do that. If you prefer to call in, we do have the listener hotline. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. You can leave a voicemail there. If you want to save on long distance charges, I also have Skype available. You can leave voicemail there. My Skype address is TheMacCast. And if you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of The MacCast, including the links for today's picks, you'll find those at MacCast.com. While you're there, be sure to check out the forum, forum.maccast.com. And if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, I'm twitter.com/MacCast, or over on Facebook, facebook.com/TheMacCast. All right, that's going to do it for today. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.